Israelis hit Hezbollah, there will be a war on the northern front as well. Israel will not be able to continue at its genocide in Gaza much longer, in my view.
Okay, on that note, we come to the end of this show. Thank you, my guests, Ray McGovern in Raleigh, North Carolina, George Zamorli in Budapest. And thank you for watching this edition of The Spotlight.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Here we enlighten you with ayahs 36 through 38 from the Surah Nahl, recited by Qasim Razi.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ولقد بعثنا في كل أمة رسولا أن اعبدوا الله واجتنبوا الطاغوت فمنهم من هدى الله ومنهم من حقت عليه الضلالة فسيروا في الأرض فانظروا كيف كان عاقبة المكذبين إن تحرص على هداهم فإن الله لا يهدي من يضل وما لهم من ناصرين وأقسموا بالله جهد أيمانهم لا يبعث الله من يموت بلى وعدا عليه حقا ولكن أكثر الناس لا يعلمون بلى وعدا عليه حقا ولكن أكثر الناس لا يعلمون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And certainly we raised in every nation an apostle, saying, serve Allah and shun the Satan. So there were some of them who Allah guided, and there were others against whom error was due. Therefore travel in the land, then see what was the end of the rejecters. If you desire further guidance, yet surely Allah does not guide him who leads astray, nor shall they have any helpers. And they swear by Allah with the most energetic of their oath, Allah will not raise up him who dies. Yeah, is a promise binding on him, quite true, but most people do not know.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Israeli forces kill and injure nearly 90 civilians in yet another attack on aid seekers in northern Gaza as the regime's genocidal war enters its 160th day. An aid boat sets sail from Cyprus is gradually heading towards the Gaza Strip amid growing calls for further humanitarian assistance to the besieged territory. And the leader of Hezbollah says Israel is paying a high price in its war with the resistance in Gaza and Lebanon, but is trying to hide its losses. Our top story for this half hour: Israel's genocidal war in the Gaza Strip is now in its 160th day, with the regime pounding the blockaded territory with more airstrikes and artillery fire. Israel's latest strike hit an UNRWA aid distribution center in the southern city of Rafah, leaving 5 Palestinians dead. Israeli forces also opened fire on a group of Palestinians waiting for aid in northern Gaza, killing at least 6 people and injuring over 80 others. A regime air raid targeting a house in Jabalia refugee camp killed at least 1 civilian, leaving several others injured. In Rafah, 2 civilians were killed and some others injured after Israeli forces bombed their vehicle. Gaza Health Ministry says nearly 31,300 Palestinians, mostly women and children, have so far been killed in the Israeli genocide since early last October. Over 73,000 others have been injured. The U.S.'s decision to build a temporary port off Gaza's Mediterranean coast is a misleading measure aimed at buying time for the Israeli regime. That's according to Deputy Secretary General of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Muhammad al-Hindi. He said construction of the port could lead to displacement of even more Palestinians from the blockaded territory. Hindi added that those who want to send aid to Gaza should open the territory's crossings instead of proposing to establish a port. He stressed that the U.S. administration has been a partner in the Israeli genocide in Gaza from day one by providing the regime with weapons without Congress's permission. Hindi stressed that apparent disagreements between the U.S. and Israel are not genuine and are only related to their tactics. He said Israel seeks to separate the north of Gaza from its south with American cover and reduce its area by creating a buffer zone. And a vessel loaded with food aid is gradually heading towards Gaza amid growing calls to deal with dire humanitarian conditions in the besieged Palestinian Strip. The vessel sent by a Spanish NGO is towing a barge of 200 tons of food aid It set sail from a port in Cyprus on Tuesday. Meanwhile, Cypriot foreign minister said a second aid ship with bigger capacities being prepared in the Larnaca port. Israel's bombardment and ground offensive has reduced much of Gaza's infrastructure to rubble. The onslaught continues unabated. On Wednesday, the main UN aid agency in Gaza said an Israeli strike hit one of its warehouses in the southern city of Rafah, killing at least one staff member. The dire food shortages causing malnutrition and dehydration in Gaza have already claimed 27 lives, most of them children. International aid agencies say the current aid entry cannot address the dire humanitarian situation in Gaza. Well, for more on that, we're now joined by Khalid Barakat, who is a journalist and activist, joining us from Vancouver. Mr. Barakat, welcome to the program. First of all, I want to get your thoughts on this aid vessel that has set sail from Cyprus towards the Gaza Strip. Of course, there is a precedent in the past for the Israelis intercepting and impeding these aid vessels and aid cargo from reaching the besieged Palestinians in Gaza. Give us your take on what's going to happen.
Well, the problem with these initiatives is that it comes as a replacement of ending the siege and opening the crossings, which is what the Palestinians want. They want to see Rafah crossing, Kerem Abu Salem, and other crossing open. There are thousands and thousands of trucks full of aid and waiting to enter, but Israel is refusing to do that. And at the same time, the Europeans, the Americans, and some of even NGOs are complicit in this. They want to show that we can starve you to death, and at the same time, they want to keep Palestinians, in need of aid. And today, for example, the United Nations have met with Palestinian heads of tribes in Gaza, and they have listened to a unanimous United Palestinian positions that people in Gaza support the resistance. Any aid that comes to Gaza has to be in coordination with the Palestinian resistance. And on the ground, I mean, if the resistance doesn't want any of these vessels to enter Gaza, they are able to do so. But the resistance has been very careful in terms of looking at these initiatives. So they are being also very realistic because they understand that people have reached in reality a starvation. I mean, people are dying of starvation, and this is because of U.S. position. United States is responsible for starving the Palestinian people in Gaza.
And Mr. Barakat, let's also focus on the issue of this humanitarian aid port that is scheduled to be built by the United States. A lot of skepticism has been directed towards that. Why does Gaza in the first place not even have a port? We know it doesn't have a port. It doesn't have an airport, which was also destroyed by the Israelis a long time ago. There are better ways to get aid into Gaza, like opening the already existing border crossings. How do you read into this initiative by the United States at this point in time?
I mean, this is not new. In fact, Palestinians in Gaza, 10 years ago, they have suggested that they need a port in Gaza, the one that Israel destroyed. And the United States, Israel, and Egypt have blocked any initiative to build a port in Gaza. The United States have led all efforts to actually end the siege on Gaza. They have this latest U.S. initiative used to be a British one right at the beginning of the aggression on Gaza after October 7th. The British proposal did not get any response. Also because the United States wants to look like as if they're leading any of these efforts. What happened in reality is that the United States is you know, supporting the Zionist regime in committing its genocidal war against the Palestinian people. And the Palestinian people across the board, not, you know, if not 100% of Palestinians, 99% of Palestinians believe that this is a U.S. war against the Palestinian people, and they are supporting Israel to the teeth. They are providing political support for Israel, economic, military support. You know, F-16s and F-35 U.S.-made weapons that is destroying Gaza and killing the people of Gaza for the past 5 months and for the past 75 years, actually. Western, you know, powers have been killing the Palestinian people and arming the Zionist regime to the teeth. Now, this also, the United States wants this because they feel a very heavy pressure internally. People in the United States have changed their position about Palestine. They feel that they have been deceived by their government for decades, that Israel is this, you know, little poor country, that it's surrounded by all these aggressors. And now the Palestinian, you know, the people in the United States, in Canada, in the West, they understand that any U.S. initiative is just because they want to wash their hands from, you know, the blood of the Palestinian people. These are war criminals. I mean, Antony Blinken is a racist, pathological liar who no one believes in the region. You know, when he comes and speak about, you know, supporting the Palestinian people through this so-called temporary, you know, peer is just a joke. No one takes it seriously. And this is not just a war against the Palestinian people. This is the holy month of Ramadan. The United States is waging a war against 2 billion Muslims. When they don't understand what, you know, the implications of this when people in Ramadan across the Muslim world are watching their brothers and sisters being slaughtered by the day, over 100 Palestinians every day get killed by U.S. weapons. And, you know, every time Antony Blinken comes to the region, he is, you know, challenging even, you know, the basic values, you know, of humanity and of the people of the region, talking about how Israel have the right to defend itself. No colonizer have the right to defend itself. And October 7th, it's going to look like a very small operation compared to what's coming in the coming decades. Israel have signed its death through this genocide war crime, and the United States is going to be actually pushed away, pushed back, and the United States present in the region is going to you know, diminish, because the people of the region understand that this war against the Palestinian people have been orchestrated by the American administration,
sure,
by the Biden administration.
Thanks a lot, journalist and activist Khaled Barakat, joining us from Vancouver. Elsewhere, the leader of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement said Israel is incurring significant losses in terms of military personnel in Gaza and Lebanon, and its army is worn out and tired on all fronts.
Israeli soldiers, this is a very tired army, and let us just see that they are exhausted. That it's not just to say that there's, of course, there's hunger in Gaza, there's destruction of homes, destruction of buildings. This is just one part, but there's another part as well. The numbers of Israeli soldiers killed or wounded is a huge number, and there is a unity that the numbers are much higher than what the Israeli army is actually announcing. Some are saying 3 times, some saying 4 times the number. Let's take an example. When the chief of staff goes,
speaking in a televised speech, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah noted that Israel is covering up its military losses and is experiencing a severe shortage of soldiers. He said the regime has resorted to recruiting thousands of people, even from the ultra-Orthodox Jewish community. Nasrallah said in the Northern Front, the regime is imposing strict censorship on information about its losses in terms of soldiers, military vehicles, and other assets. The Hezbollah leader noted that senior Israeli experts and former ministers have admitted to strategic and economic losses that the regime is suffering. Nasrallah also commented on the United States' support for the regime, urging Washington to halt the Israeli aggression instead of helping it. Regarding conflict in Gaza, Nasrallah said the regime has lost the war as it has failed to achieve its declared objectives, including the eradication of Hamas. Well, Iran, China, and Russia have kicked off the main phase of a joint maritime exercise in the Iranian territorial waters located in the north of the Sea of Oman. In the first phase of the drills, different units of Islamic Republic of Iran Navy, the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps Navy, along with naval forces from Russia and China, conduct different types of maritime exercises.
Iran, Russia, and China have conducted the main phase of a joint naval drill dubbed Maritime Security Belt 2024. After arriving at the northern part of the Indian Ocean, the vessels of the three countries practiced different operations. The joint drills took place in 17,000 square kilometers of water in a region that is an internationally crucial hub for energy and trade traffic. The first phase of the naval drills included live firing at designated surface targets in the Sea of Oman. Various vessels and fast attack crafts from the IRGC were also involved in the exercise. The vessels were armed with the state-of-the-art homegrown advanced weapons. The next phase included the Photo X exercise and offensive formations. The helicopters of the Islamic Republic of Iran Navy and the IRGC monitored the region in all stages of the exercise. Iran's Navy commander hailed the exercise as a successful endeavor to improve maritime cooperation of the contributing countries. The commander also said that Iran expects the drills to expand in the future.
This year, as we expected, regarding the types of vessels participating in the exercise, both China and Russia have increased the variety as well as tonnage of the vessels. So hopefully, we expect more countries to join the drills in the future, especially regional states.
Admiral Irani also stated that regional nations have the capacity to confront piracy and terrorism by enhancing cooperation. The exercises are the latest in joint drills by Iran, China, and Russia. Iran says regional countries are most welcome to take part in the drills that are going to take place in the future. The Islamic Republic has time and again stressed that regional countries are the ones that are truly in charge of establishing security in the region. Mahdi Abbasian, Konarak.
That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee. So recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday five things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, Thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
Ayahs, 30 days. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. A monotheist person not only reflects on the Quran, but also tries to explain the ayahs of this heavenly scripture to others and make them familiar with its teachings. Explicating of the Quranic teachings, first of all, was the duty of the Prophet and his infallible successors. Every faithful too, according to the extent that they had learned from the Ahlul Bayt, embarked on this heavy duty. So, the ulema, Muslim scholars, took over this duty after the occultation of the 12th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, and have seriously continued his job till the present day. Today, this duty has become highly important due to the broad assault of enemies against the beliefs of Islam in humanity. In the third episode of Ramadan special series, we are going to explain Ayah 64 of Surah Ali Imran of the Noble Quran. This ayah is about inviting the people of the book to unity and commonalities. Stay tuned, please. The blessed month of Ramadan is the exceptional opportunity with unique moments, particularly in the midnight and dawn. Among the beauties of this world are differences in the nature of human beings. Imam Ali, peace upon him, says that every human is a vast world of thoughts, moralities, and tastes. But the point to note is that differences should not cause distance or enmity and spite among individuals. For instance, Consider a vast country where differences cause separation and hostility, and the previous power and solidarity will perish and the country might be disintegrated. Imagine one day in which all Christians, Jews, and Muslims are united and rise up against oppression and injustice. Will there remain injustice anymore? God tells the prophet in Ayah 64 of Surah Ali Imran, "Say, O people of the book, come to the word common between us and you, that we will worship no one but Allah, and that we will not ascribe any partner to him, and that we will not take each other as lords besides Allah." In this ayah, Allah calls for unity. Unity means to put aside whatever has entered religion as distortion and made it toward polytheism. It means to cling to the fundamental principle, that is monotheism. What causes rift and disunity is to follow those who distort religion purposefully and consciously. There have always been people in history who intend to discord among people. In addition, we live in the digital age, which has yielded individualism. People who are plunged in the cyberspace believe that the best way for achieving happiness and success is to pursue one's vested interest and personal desires. In other words, what is the use of it for me? Is the main concern and question for such people. But how can we rescue human communities from these crises? It seems that sympathy, cooperation, and attachment to one another is the best antidote for individualism and egotism. God says in Ayah 103 of Surah Ali Imran, "And hold fast to Allah's cord, all together, and do not be divided. And remember Allah's blessing upon you when you were enemies. Then He brought your hearts together, so you became brothers with His blessing." Interestingly, the capitalist world and Western liberalism claims to make unity based on common interest among humans, whereas this is not unity. It is rather contradiction and enmity, because whoever intends to gain more profit considers others as troublesome and enemy. So, he cannot feel sympathy and cooperate with him. Unity and cooperation materializes around obedience of God and the Prophet. In the Battle of Badr, Muslims fought with trust in God and triumphed in spite of being small in number. Then, in order to prevent Muslims from being trapped in rivalry for gaining more war booties and worldly gains, Allah said in Ayah 46 of Surah Anfal, "And obey Allah and His Apostle, and do not dispute, or you will lose heart and your power will be gone." Thus, obedience of God and the Prophet is the way for unity and solidarity. Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace upon her, said on this, "Allah ordained our velayat, authority and rule, the factor for solidarity and coherence of Ummah. But the front of arrogance, the United States and its allies, administered the world through the old policy of sow discord and rule. In a clear and face-to-face battle, it is easy to recognize the enemy, but it is very hard to recognize the enemy in soft war and compound war. In such wars, enemies come to the scene with the visage of a friend." Imam Ali, peace upon him, says in Nahjul Balagha that once a man came to him during his rule. The man asked the Imam, "What happened years ago that your right was usurped?" Imam Ali, peace upon him, answered, "O brother, you are speaking undue words. Let me speak to you about Muawiyah." This shows how we should discern priority at any time and take the proper measure. To put it clearer, we should not be engaged in margins to neglect the main enemy. At that time, Muawiyah, son of Abu Sufyan, was the main enemy. Thus, the commander of the faithful abandoned his differences with other sects. It has been narrated that one of the Sunni inhabitants of Samarra in Iraq held grudge against Mirza Muhammad Hassan Husseini Shirazi, the great source of emulation of Shia Muslims over a century ago. The man injured the elder son of Mirza Shirazi and the son succumbed to injury. The great source of emulation showed no reaction. However, the enemies of Muslims decided to exploit the situation to cause a sedition and fish in the troubled water. They came up to Mirza calling for harsh reaction from him. Yet, Mirza Shirazi insightfully and smartly understood their motive and said resolutely to the British Council, "In Iraq, there is no need for the British interference in the affair that has nothing to do with them. You are not entitled to meddle in any of the affairs related to us Muslims and our lands. This is a simple issue between two brothers. We have the same religion, Qibla and Quran." It is good to know that the British policy of sow discord and rule and being strongly implemented in the Islamic countries. The 8-year war that the United States and its allies imposed on the Islamic Republic of Iran through their suge, Saddam Hussein, was an obvious instance of this policy. But the insightful and smart leader of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, said in the heat of the war, "Whatever you want to shout, cry it out against the US." The founder of the Islamic Republic very sharply and foresightedly distinguished the arch enemy of Muslims and kept stressing all out a struggle against it. He explained to the people that if there is a war in the region and if Saddam, al-Saud and Wahhabis are forging rift and causing sedition, the roots of all of them should be traced in Washington. The blessed month of Ramadan is the outstanding symbol of unity and solidarity among Muslims. Fasting in this month, like Hajj pilgrimage and rituals, unites Muslims and gives them a single color. Muslims from all sects gather around the obedience of Allah within the Islamic Ummah. Every Muslim considers himself or herself as a member of this great Ummah. They feel close to all brothers and sisters living in the farthest regions in the world. Let us obey the noble Quran and get united around the Prophet against common enemies.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Western media inaccurately described the reason behind Aaron Bushnell's actions as a protest on the Israeli-Hamas war, despite him stating it was to protest the genocide of Palestinians at the hands of the Zionist entity. Now, the New York Times is embroiled in controversy over a discredited article claiming Hamas sexually assaulted a Zionist settler during the Al-Aqsa flood operation. And Bushnell, hailed as a hero, receiving praise from many pro-Palestinian activists who saw his extreme act of protest as a success in drawing attention to the genocide and suffering of the Palestinian people. Welcome to Exposé, the show that leaves no stone unturned. Sunday, February 24, Aaron Bushnell, an active duty member of the U.S. Air Force, passed away from injuries sustained in the fire he lit himself with in front of the Israeli entity embassy the day before in Washington, D.C., in protest of the Israeli genocide on Palestinians and the complicity of his government in this Zionist genocide. Bushnell's final words were, "Free Palestine." In a video recorded on his way to the embassy, Bushnell said, "I will no longer be complicit in genocide. I'm about to engage in an extreme act of protest, but compared to what people have been experiencing in Palestine at the hands of their colonizers, it's not extreme at all. This is what our ruling class has decided will be normal." Bushnell explained in the video he streamed before he set himself on fire. So Fuad Itayim, our broadcast expert and writer at The Cradle in Fake News Exposé. Aaron Bushnell, a name that will go down in history as a man who opted to sacrifice his own life to protest his country's involvement in genocide against the Palestinian people. However, as expected, Western and Zionist media made sure to smear his name every chance they got and went as far as accuse him of being mentally ill. Fuad will tell us more about this smearing campaign. Go ahead, Fuad.
So let's start with MSNBC's coverage of Aaron Bushnell and his heroic self-immolation. So Aaron Bushnell, the U.S. Air Force airman. MSNBC referred to his heroic sacrifice as a protest against the Israel-Hamas war, simplifying it completely, even though he clearly stated in his video that this was an extreme form of protest in solidarity with the Palestinians who are having a genocide waged against them. This was the only coverage that MSNBC did on Aaron Bushnell, and it wasn't shared either on their website or on their social media. But the internet caught it. So here's the clip that we found on YouTube of that live report aired on MSNBC, where they go the extra mile in fake news, inaccuracy, and even disrespect, airing the suicide hotline to imply that Aaron Bushnell was crazy and that this was done because of a mental health issue instead of an extreme form of protest against a genocide, ongoing genocide.
This is so disrespectful.
Yesterday, 25-year-old Aaron Bushnell of San Antonio, Texas, the active duty airman in the U.S. Air Force who set himself on fire outside the Israeli embassy in an apparent protest against the Israel-Hamas war, has died. That identification made by Metropolitan Police here. Bushnell filmed his own self-immolation on his cell phone, yelling, "Free Palestine," before collapsing to the ground outside the embassy. He was rushed to the hospital for treatment, but later succumbed to his injuries. And if you or someone you know is in crisis, call or text 988 to reach the suicide aid.
Wow.
Yeah, so this is one example of Western mainstream media basically assuming the role of defense attorneys for Israel through its narratives, which have unfortunately successfully portrayed an occupying power as a victim. So our audience is going to see more about that in the mainstream media section with Julia. Don't get me wrong, I don't mean to imply that every single media outlet portrayed this terribly. For example, CNN, while their headline was lacking some really crucial context, surprisingly their televised coverage of the matter was not so bad. So let's focus on that aspect and take a look.
Authorities identified Aaron Bushnell as the person who, on Sunday, set himself on fire. The 25-year-old was an active-duty member of the U.S. Air Force. CNN's Gabe Cohen joins us now with the details. And Gabe, this is something that he did in protest.
Yeah, that's correct. And we're learning much more about this 25-year-old active duty airman, Aaron Bushnell, as you mentioned. He's from San Antonio, Texas, and he live streamed his actions on Sunday in broad daylight on the streets of D.C. outside the Israeli embassy. We are not going to show that video. It is extremely graphic and disturbing. I have watched the video. I can tell you at the beginning, at the start of it, you can see Bushnell walking up to the embassy on the street in his military fatigues. He's speaking calmly to the camera. I want to read a portion of what he says. He said, quote, "I will no longer be complicit in genocide. I'm about to engage in an extreme act of protest, but compared to what people have been experiencing in Palestine at the hands of their colonizers, it is not extreme at all. This is what our ruling class has decided will be normal." He then goes on to pour some sort of accelerant, it looks like, on his head out of a water bottle he was carrying. And then he lights himself on fire, Boris. And as the flames engulf him, you can hear him yelling, free Palestine, again and again, until finally he collapses. And that is when officers, you can see them race in, one of them with a fire extinguisher in their hands, trying to put out the flames. But it takes time. And as we have learned, Bushnell died in the hospital at some point later on. And look, it really speaks to the tensions that are continuing to escalate around the war in Gaza, not just across the world, but here in the United States. We saw a similar incident in December when someone self-immolated, lit themselves on fire outside of the Israeli consulate in Atlanta. But this feels different. This is an active duty member of the military burning himself to death on the streets of the nation's capital.
Wow, Fuad. I mean, that is refreshing, despite the fact that it's a very painful incident. But, I mean, CNN.
This was a bit better. So they relayed his message. They recounted his last words. They said much more clearly that this was an extreme form of protest instead of calling him crazy, like MSNBC did, basically. But, of course, it's CNN. So they didn't mention that Israel is starving and killing babies. They didn't go into detail about the horrific genocide that's ongoing that we're witnessing on a daily basis. But this may be the best that we can expect from Western mainstream media.
And it is a very, very advanced position, if I may. Thank you very much, Fuad,
for
your analysis in Fake News Exposé. Ladies and gents, now we move on to digital mainstream media. Mainstream media is not doing a sufficient enough job of informing the audience about the severity of the atrocities being committed by the Zionist entity in Gaza. Julia Qasim, our mainstream media expert, joins us to tell us more about it. The floor is yours, Julia.
Thanks, Marwa. So to the extent that mainstream media does actually cover the genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza, major outlets like the New York Times or the Washington Post have published content that's obviously skewed towards the Zionist entity. Too little, too late, and, you know, 5 months after the fact if they decide to admit to the crimes at all. So take, for example, the controversy that is currently engulfing the New York Times, Marwa, which is now exposed, one of the co-authors of a discredited piece that accused the Palestinian resistance Hamas of rape on October 7th, Al-Aqsa flood operation, as being a former member of the IOF's intelligence unit and had not even worked as a journalist at all prior to taking a central role in the New York Times coverage of October 7th. So we've covered a story in an earlier expose segment, but this time it's been revealed that Anat Schwartz, the co-author of the badly flawed article How Hamas Weaponized Sexual Violence, liked posts on social media that glorified the genocide against Palestinians and had no past bylines in journalism.
So audacious that something that only mainstream media would attempt, something so unprofessional and crazy, doesn't it?
Right. As we remember, the article made false claims of sexual violence by Hamas on October 7th. This is a regular tactic employed by the Palestinian Resistance Group as a weapon of war. So the family of a soldier who was allegedly attacked by Hamas on that particular day, according to this piece, and was portrayed as a key character in the story about rape, Gal Abdush, was furious and actually condemned the account of their daughter. So the family claimed to have no clue whatsoever that Gal had been sexually assaulted, no proof to back up their allegations, and no knowledge that the Times was going to publish a story alleging that their daughter had been raped. So a third of the article was devoted to the story of Gal Abdush, written by this former IDF intelligence soldier. And this scandal just brings us back to the unconfirmed story about the 40 beheaded babies, which no mainstream media sources ever really investigated.
Definitely. As if these 40 babies have no parents to tell us their stories. Just like, for example, the parents of Abdush said that none of this that was mentioned in the New York Times was actually true. It was all fiction. It was not a fact whatsoever. So how about other pieces like that, like the 40 babies, or like mass rape, or like, for example, the attack on the desert concert, for that matter.
Now, following up on what Fuad was talking about in the fake news segment of the broadcast media, concerning the misrepresentation of Aaron Bushnell's self-immolation in support of the Palestinian people, we have a piece by the Washington Post entitled, Aaron Bushnell Was Not a Hero. Self-immolation is not an act of political protest we should celebrate. In this piece, Ramesh Ponaru, a contributing columnist to the Washington Post, was adamant on showing his discontentment that Bushnell's act of protest has earned him some post-mortem praise, with activists calling him a hero and calling his self-immolation a wake-up call. So he was especially frustrated that the Jewish Voice for Peace honored Bushnell by calling his self-immolation a final act of solidarity. This piece also condemned Cornel West, a progressive academic who's running for president in the U.S., for saying we should never forget Bushnell's courage. And it also condemned Green Party candidate Jill Stein for quoting Bushnell and writing, "This extraordinary sacrifice brings into greater focus the immense horror that our government is committing in our name." Poneru also concludes in an opinion piece that these economists are irresponsible, they are also false.
Wow.
So this, Marwa, shows how immediately after Bushnell's death, coverage purposely excluded the reason why he was protesting and the fact that it was done to shed light on the complicity of the U.S. government in the genocide waged on Gaza by the Zionist entity. And rather, the coverage shifted to why people should not continue, you know, consider his act as protest, but as suicide.
Mm-hmm. Which is definitely, it tells you a lot about the people who support Zionist Israel and how their mentality, when it's when the narrative doesn't serve them, their mentality goes directly into either calling people terrorists or calling them mentally ill. Anyways, I want to thank you very much, Ms. Julia Qasim, for telling us the latest about the digital mainstream media, especially about the hero Aaron Bushnell. Now, ladies and gents, we move on to social media expose. Whether or not you agree with Aaron Bushnell's form of extreme protest or not, he managed with his last breath to speak up on behalf of Palestinians facing extermination at the hands of a genocidal Zionist regime that is being fully funded, supported, and armed by the U.S. government. Aaron did this to make sure that his message was heard, and heard it was on social media, repeated by many supporters of Palestine and denounced by many advocates of Zionist Israel's genocidal behavior against Palestinians. Here is Sima Itayim, our social media expert and editor at The Cradle, with more. There you go.
Thank you for having me, Marwa. So Aaron Bushnell's extreme act of protest, the motive behind that was not only to draw attention to U.S. complicity to the genocidal war in Gaza, but to actually grab the attention mm-hmm. of U.S. media. Mm-hmm. And it's impossible to discuss his actions while ignoring his words. But that is precisely what the media attempted to do. Mm-hmm. We have a tweet by The Barracks Live mm-hmm. on X saying, "Aaron Bushnell, an active duty officer in the armed forces, setting himself on fire to protest his deployment to Israel is a very bad look for the U.S. info war. The mainstream media is working overtime for the Pentagon to smear his name. Never stop saying his name. Hashtag Aaron Bushnell."
Wow. So they got it. They got it good, and they got it early that a smearing campaign is being basically pushed by the regime in the U.S. and in Zionist Israel as well.
And this further exposed U.S. media mm-hmm. in its bias and in its silence. So we have another post on X by Danny Haifong at Spirit of Ho, who addressed this matter, saying, "Mainstream media want us to contemplate the mental health of Aaron Bushnell while ignoring the fact that governments of Israel and the U.S. are committing a genocide in a concentration camp in the year 2024. That's the real sickness here."
I second what Danny is saying, and it is horrific the way that they are trying to portray him as mentally ill.
Yeah, or just unstable, because they can't even make the case that he's mentally ill. You know, grew up in a religious household, has anarchist background,
and whatnot, just trying to tell the world that he's not sane.
Exactly. So we have also, as Fuad mentioned earlier, CNN handled the news of this extreme act of protest surprisingly in a more truthful and professional way than we actually expected mm-hmm. this time. So there's a post on X by Caitlin Johnstone, who quote tweeted a video of CNN's coverage of Bushnell's act of protest, saying, "He did it. Aaron Bushnell forced this to happen. He did something so jarring and impactful that the mass media would be forced to report the raw facts about it if they want to avoid internal conflict like CNN and NYT have been experiencing in recent weeks. He left them no choice." Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the social media campaign to honor Aaron Bushnell's sacrifice on behalf of Palestine is still sweeping social media platforms all over the world. Mm-hmm. Like this Facebook post by Sean King, who's a New York Times best-selling author of Make Change. He's also co-founder of Grassroots Law, mm-hmm. And he happens to have a follower base of 2.5 million. Mm-hmm. So he posted a photo of Bushnell and wrote, "Aaron Bushnell, the U.S. Air Force veteran who gave his life to help stop the genocide of Palestinians, has passed away. I want to honor a young man that was so disturbed by the genocide of Palestinians that he set himself on fire yesterday at the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. Instead of harming someone else, he made a choice that, of course, seems strange and disturbing to all of us, but I empathize with him. Daily, I grapple with just how ineffective we all are at stopping this. And sometimes I feel like my heart and soul and brain have been broken by all of this evil. It's hard to know what to do in this moment. Please pray for his family and be encouraged by the sacrifice he made.
Well, definitely that shows a lot how much support the extreme act of protest by Aaron Bushnell was received by many, not only in the East, where we, the natives, have a struggle against colonizers represented by the Zionist Israelis, but also in the West, where they're in Australia, the U.S., or, for example, Europe, for that matter. And people are seeing beyond what the mainstream media usually tries to portray as being nonsensical, not facts, fake news, or even mentally ill people. But I want to thank you very much for telling us the reacts of people on social media, whether on X or on Facebook. Seema, it's always a pleasure having you on board with us. Now, ladies and gents, we move on to Figures Exposé. Now, half the people who responded to a national poll conducted by the University of Massachusetts Amherst in February believe that the Zionist Israeli entity is committing genocide against the Palestinian people living in Gaza, according to the recently released poll results. Now, the poll, which used a sample of 1,064 U.S. adults, was split exactly in half on the question, is the Israeli entity committing genocide against the Palestinian people living in Gaza? 50% said Zionist Israel was probably or definitely committing genocide, and 50% said Zionist Israel was probably or definitely not committing genocide. Here is the full breakdown according to the poll. 18% believe Zionist Israel is definitely committing genocide. 32% believe Zionist Israel is probably committing genocide. And 24% believe Zionist Israel is probably not committing genocide. And 26% believe Zionist Israel is definitely not committing genocide. Now, respondents also answered a question on their support for Zionist Israel's military operation in Gaza since October 7 and about the $10 billion U.S. dollars in military aid to Zionist Israel in support of their war on Palestinians. Now, a plurality of respondents supported the Israeli entity's military operation, with 43% in support, 26% opposing, and 32% said neither. But respondents were more evenly divided on the question of U.S. aid, where 36% supported the aid to Zionist Israel and 35% opposed the aid, with 29% undecided. Now, let us move on to the most notable exposé voices for this week. Now, as the world grapples with Bushnell's self-immolation, many took to social media to post their thoughts. Many who support Palestinians describe him as a hero and pay tribute to him, celebrating his act of extreme form of protest for its impact, primarily raising awareness for the Palestinians' plight and genocide. Our first voice for tonight comes from Instagram with Hassanain Jaffer, who said he hoped to find more words to do Aaron justice. Here is Hassanain's voice.
One of the last things Aaron Bushnell said before he started the pyre was that he didn't consider his action to be extreme because this is what our ruling classes have decided will be normal. This is really profound framing. He really understood the idea that racial capitalism relies on us accepting their narrative as the normal. Somehow it's normal to witness an entire population of people being displaced and starving, whilst our response should be sitting in our fancy government chambers and deciding that X politician is worth voting for because they called for a temporary ceasefire or a humanitarian pause in the fighting. There is no normal anymore. The ruling class desperately want us to return to their version of normal so that we can continue participating and fueling their system and remain too exhausted to continue questioning their narrative. An abnormal world requires abnormal responses. An extreme world requires extreme responses. You can disagree with self-immolation as a form of protest, but you have to be consistent. The media was all over this when it was happening during the Arab Spring. You cannot disagree with the effectiveness, the selflessness of this sort of response, because what we are responding to is white phosphorus burning the skin off of children playing with kites. As Aaron reminded us with his final words, Free Palestine.
Now, many social media users were furious at the Western and Zionist media for labeling Aaron Bushnell as a mentally ill individual instead of focusing on the reason he chose this form of extreme protest through self-immolation. Blakely Bartley on TikTok refused to accept the smearing campaign and replied by saying that maybe it's you who is mentally ill. Here is Blakely's voice from TikTok.
To all the people that are smearing Aaron Bushnell and saying that he was mentally ill, maybe it's you. Maybe it's the fact that you've become so disconnected from your own humanity that you can continue to watch a live stream genocide for 4 months and feel nothing. People are already digging into his background trying to find any way they can to smear him. There is no evidence that he was mentally ill. But even if he was, calling him mentally ill because he decided to engage in an extreme form of protest as our government ignores us while they enable a genocide tells me that you know nothing about mental illness. He knew exactly what he was doing. He wrote a will in which he said he wanted the remainder of his money to go to the Palestinian Children's Fund. He said that he wanted his neighbor to keep his cat. If any of you saw the video, he was extremely calm and very clear about what he was doing as he was doing it. You're trying to smear him in death because it's easier than having to ask yourself what would drive a 25-year-old to do such an extreme action.
Now, since Aaron Bushnell was an active duty member of the U.S. Air Force, some U.S. servicemen like TikToker at Big Bearded Chief were sad to see one of their own self-immolate to support a cause. But TikTokers like Reid Adel replied to them in a very rational way. Let us hear Reid's voice.
It's just sad that anyone feels they have to do that.
You're absolutely right. It's sad that active duty U.S. Air Force member had to self-emulate in order to garner attention and sympathy for the Palestinian cause because the U.S. government continues to ignore our calls for a ceasefire now. Aaron Bushnell did not commit suicide. Aaron Bushnell committed an act of extreme protest. He did not have a mental illness. He was clear in his intention. And it is completely inappropriate for you and the media to spin a story of mental illness when Aaron Bushnell does not have a history of that, nor you are deflecting. Rest in power.
Now, ladies and gents, with that, we conclude our expose for tonight. Stay tuned for more eye-opening investigations on Expose. The truth is just a revelation away.
Leaders meeting with families of martyrs and first-time voters. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with a number of first-time voters and families of martyrs just before parliamentary elections were held in Iran. The meeting took place at the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniyah in Tehran on Wednesday, 28th of February. In this program, we discuss the leader's remarks and points of view expressed at this meeting. Please stay with us. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with a number of first-time voters and families of martyrs on Wednesday, 28th of February. After welcoming the young people, first-time voters and the honourable families of the martyrs, the leader referred to the blessed days of Sha'ban and following that, the blessed month of Ramadan, and urged young people to get closer to the Almighty through prayers and supplication. Ayatollah Khamenei added, Sha'ban is the month of supplications, talking with God and seeking forgiveness. In the few days that are left, my earnest advice to you is to supplicate, seek forgiveness from God and send salutations upon Prophet Muhammad and his progeny blessings of God upon them. Supplications increase your connection with the Almighty. They strengthen your relationship with Almighty God. When we say, Astaghfirullah wa atubu alayh, I seek forgiveness from God and return towards Him, means that I return towards God. I had distanced myself from God because of my mistakes and sins, and now I'm returning towards the Almighty, and the Almighty accepts this return. When we send our greetings and salutations to Prophet Muhammad and the progeny of Muhammad, peace be upon them, we are in fact reviving the memory of the best human models in our minds. These honorable people are the best human beings and the best individuals that God has created. Their lives, their words and behavior serve as examples to us all to follow. In Imam Hussein's supplication on the day of Arafah, and the supplications of Sahifat al-Sajjadiyya and Munajat al-Sha'baniyya, there are concepts and teachings that one cannot find anywhere else. Developing a companionship with supplications raises the knowledge of a Muslim, and it is very valuable. Turning to parliamentary elections and its importance, Ayatollah Khamenei said, signs of excitement and enthusiasm for the elections can be seen throughout the country in various places. The eagerness and fervor for the elections are palpable, and we should be grateful to God for this. It is desirable that the elections, not only the elections 2 days from now, but all the elections in the country, be held with strength and enthusiasm. But why? Because after the Islamic Revolution, our young people have advanced significantly